time you shop. If you missed any of that information, you can visit kpft.org to learn more. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide. You can also find KPFT on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston. Coming up next, Technology Bites.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to tonight's edition of Technology Bites.
Welcome to a very sweaty edition of Technology Bites.
Biscuit and Demon.
A manly Herculean edition.
No. Oh, be quiet, air conditioning person.
Yeah, we don't
AC
like...
dweller.
AC dweller.
Non-moist
Man,
person.
It is. We're sweat lodging over here.
Person not holding a Baptist church fan in their hands.
The station has provided hand fans.
Sweating like a sinner on a Sunday.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's...
Drewhouse.
I'm Lee.
Lee doesn't sound excited to be back with us. What's up?
I finished work
early. We missed you.
I made sure to get everything done so I could get out of the house in time to get here to the studio. There was no traffic. It was beautiful.
Did you shower, I hope? I hope everyone showered.
I showered right before
Not that
I left.
It did
I
any
did,
good.
Be, well, on the way out of here, I'm going to be dripping and gross and...
Yes.
Hugging everybody.
Tripping. Just wet with
Drive
geek.
To Pete's geek, house geek. And give him a big hug, too. He'll be there at about 2 a.m., Pete, just FYI.
Okay.
I'll let myself in.
Yeah.
Me?
just go right in.
Sorry.
What are you doing over
I'm
there?
I'm trying to shut down my computer. It's making noise.
Stop it.
And generating heat.
Everything's putting off heat right now. This is no good.
All right, so we are at KPFT. We're at the KPFT studios where air conditioning works in the lobby, but not in the studio.
Oh, don't put that
on.
Groovehouse yes. just put on the sweaty headphones.
Yeah, that, we could have wiped those down for you, man.
Yeah, it's
just like in slow motion.
For lack of a better word, because I know
it's kind
of
like that.
Only because I know it'll annoy some people to hear the word. It's moist in here.
It's a little moist.
What did you say, Jay? I didn't quite catch that. What?
You mean it's moist in here?
Moist.
It's moist.
We can't spend the whole show talking about how gross it is in the studio.
We
but,
could.
Oh yeah, we are.
But we might.
It's the moist show.
Well, if you go to the air conditioned website at geekradio.com, you won't have any sweat there. No
we're the,
sweat.
We're the shoist with the moist.
Shoist with the moist.
Shoist in the moist. All right. Well, we're glad you could tune in. Geekradio.com is the site. IRC.cuckoo.com if you want to IRC with us.
Cuckoo?
Cuckoo.
Where's Groovehouse?
I don't know.
He put on the moist headphones and then he ran away.
I told you we shouldn't.
He's disinfecting. And, so IRC.cuckoo.com and the channel Tech Bytes. If you want to hang out, it's the show within a show. If you don't have your own IRC client, we provided one on our website so that you can join.
Lovingly them. Crafted from Java.
Totally
full
secure.
Full of Java,
I'm sure.
Goodness.
It's totally secure. Please.
It's safe.
All your information, just, you know, credit card.
Don't be alarmed when the Java app asks for your date of birth, your mother's maiden name.
Is it safe
things
yet?
Like that.
Yes, it is 100%.
Set up some security questions that you also use. Make sure they're ones that you also use at major financial institutes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The last four digits of your social security number followed by the first seven digits of your social security
Something like that, yeah. Yep.
All right, so Groovehouse.
Barrett, are you sexting at this exact moment? Is that
no.
what you're doing? You've got like a Skype call going, and
yeah, there's a Skype call, but it's nothing something like that. Thanks, Lee.
What are you wearing, besides?
Guys,
what are you wearing, Barrett?
I like the this has happened a couple times lately, but there's the Bash.org thing where it's like, you know, there's this guy standing so close to me he can read what I'm typing.
Yeah.
This guy next to me, that's happened to me. There was a dude in line standing so close to me getting coffee to where I was. I texted. I was like, yes, you next to me, and he kind of backed off, but kind of didn't. He's like, what's coming next, huh?
Back off, man.
Where does the story go?
Ooh, say this.
He said you missed.
No, wait, no. That's not a good comeback. Try this one. You get your Cyrano de Bergerac of texting, kind of whispering into your ear. What does it mean? All right. Well, we're glad you could tune in. It's going to be 2 hours of rip roaring sweaty fun.
Oh my God! Red chest hair as far as the eye can
Barrett,
see.
I also forgot there was a call on. This is like the anticipation in the studio.
Barrett just ripped his shirt open.
Did you forget there was a call?
I kind of did. Yeah.
Or did you forget you were in the studio with all of us?
No. I forgot there was a
you missed
a video.
For those unfortunately on radio, you didn't get to see Barrett the bodice ripper ripping his own bodice. That was
wow.
And it wasn't a pearl snap either.
That's great.
It was a real.
I'm going to need a needle and some thread.
Glad we don't have a camera, so we don't have to like use the dump button.
Oh yeah.
Some things cannot be unseen.
I only saw it peripherally, and I'm still kind of blinded.
Man. I'm stunned.
The only thing I could think of was stop, because there was a lot of red.
In the name of okay.
I see red. I don't like it. All right. Well, so we're gonna take you now to the studios, the air-conditioned studios, where Posh Pete lives in air-conditioned comfort to do the Technology Bytes Info Shot. So take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Ooh, Burr, I may need to get a sweater or something. It's just icy here. Icy cold. As opposed to icy hot in the studio. No. So, got a batch of interesting stories for you tonight. Widely varied. You can see links to all this stuff. Get more info, follow up on it, whatever, at geekradio.com. We always post that. And one of the other things you could do, after you visit Geek Radio, if you want to go to kpft.org, you can pre-pledge for the pledge drive and shorten that up for us by, you know, basically if we can get you guys to pledge by using the tip jar at kpft.org, then we don't have to do as much on-air fundraising, if any, if we raise enough, and then you get the benefit of more shows. So you might just work that one into your schedule this week or tonight or whatever, and maybe give a little extra, like towards the air conditioning fund for the studio. All right, well, now onto the news. The mathematician economist Eric R. Weinstein, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, is managing director of Thiel Capital, but that doesn't mean that he thinks capitalism has a future. This is interesting. In a short but wide-ranging essay in Edge's annual question series, this year's question is, what do you consider the most interesting recent scientific news? What makes it important? Weinstein talks about the fundamentally transformative nature of software-based societies and the challenges that they put to the nature of work and economics. First, Weinstein looks at the impact of software-driven automation on labor and education. You know, previous cycles of automation have displaced some repetitive work while creating new and better forms of labor in the long run. For his example is, you know, weavers get put out of work by, you know, automated looms. But weaving is a pretty hard, you know, hand work that is difficult and tedious and repetitive. So the weavers are put out of work by that. But there are new textile industries created by the cheap fabric. You know, in other words, making higher order things with the cheap fabric that weavers would have a very difficult time producing. But software consists of two kinds of automation, doing repetitive work and doing, quote, Rube Goldberg-like processes that happen once. Mostly, obviously, they do the former, you know, since that's also what teachers, lawyers, doctors, and software engineers do. It means that the new software economy displaces far more people and leaves behind a very small number of opportunities for people who are good at thinking up and executing, quote, Rube Goldberg-like processes that happen once, like writing novels or founding Facebook and being the first one to start something. He says this leads to ever more lavish rewards for successful Rube Goldbergers, but disaster for people who use, quote, stable and cyclical work to feed their families. So, you know, the result, he says, is an insurmountable challenge to market capitalism for which there is as yet no known alternative. And basically he says this leads central banks and governments who have no idea what to do next, propping up their markets with gimmicks like quantitative easing while the real economy melts down around them. He says that the final paragraph, he says, is capitalism and communism, which briefly resembled Victor and Vanquished, increasingly look more like Thelma and Louise, a tragic couple sent over the edge by forces beyond their control. What comes next is anyone's guess, and the world hangs in the balance. So eventually, so soon or eventually or never, things like this show could be replaced by software, you know, a news algorithm to pick out the odd stories that I find. But, you know, software is not going to take that many people's jobs in the short term, right? Here's a new thing that's coming out, this new product. Conversational chatbots are the new apps, according to Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella. He declared that during the company's Build Developers Conference last month. Quote, people-to-people conversations, people-to-digital assistants, people-to-bots, and even digital assistants to bots. That's the world you're going to see in years to come. Wow, that wouldn't take away anybody's jobs, would it? you know, the apparently companies, though, are seriously pursuing chatbots. You know, certainly right now, Nadella's assertion about the rise of chatbots contains a dose of hyperbole. A chatbot isn't going to replace every application you might want on a computer, but it doesn't mean they don't matter. The people who are...
And Pete is off the air.
Pete is off the air.
Oh, this time, whoa. Yeah, 14, I know, way 14, early. 14. I like that we do 32, 32, 14, 14, so at least there's some consistency in the minutes and seconds.
He had to adjust the
61
loop.
Second loop. Oh, and so the engineer we were talking before we went on the air, as long as we're airing, you know,
dirty laundry,
station business, yeah.
Which is dirtier than usual.
And more or less, so Pete didn't drop at all. He didn't even test last time. So the one time it doesn't Actually, do it. There was no one listening on the line. Not that that's his fault, and that might have been why it didn't go. He's probably up there listening now, and that's why it dropped.
Uh-huh.
Little Schrodinger's Pete.
No doubt.
Schrodinger's connection.
All right, well, we're going to wait until, see if Pete rejoins us.
Maybe there was too much bandwidth usage by, like, you know, video streaming.
Oh, mine's off, actually. See? Mine's off.
Sure. They all hung up on you after they saw that.
Yep.
Did they see it?
I didn't even ask. I don't know. It was just kind of, it was down there, just, yeah.
Oh, she saw it, because she was like, ah. Nine.
The one time that the guy.
Can you hear me now?
Whoa, yay, there you are.
There he is.
Weird. Very strange. Because I could hear you guys the whole time. Then basically Google decided, or Hangouts decided, to mute without any kind of note or any of that, any notice or any, you know, I just basically went around checking all the different screens that have the connections, and the one on my end had a mute on it all of a sudden.
It wasn't me. Wasn't me.
Maybe it's because I was talking about bots taking our jobs, then some bot at Google decided that it would take the news job, or at least show me that I needed it.
Maybe the bots that, like, listen for, you know, family material heard you talking about what kind of jobs looming are. And
yeah, that was a totally
Right.
And work is where I was going.
Of course it was.
So, yes.
All right, where were you, and how do we get back?
Anyway, so let's see. So what is a bot anyway? You know, that we were talking about bots. Possibly. First, we were talking about software taking people's jobs, and then we were talking about how bots are the hot new thing from all the big software companies out there. The article from Fast Company says the definition they want to start with is, if the interaction is with a non-human entity and at least vaguely resembles the back-and-forth nature of conversation, it's a bot. I don't know. I've had some conversations with actual human entities that only vaguely resembled the back-and-forth nature conversations. Anyways, some examples, like the news bot from CNN and Wall Street Journal for Facebook Messenger, don't interact primarily through typing or speaking. Instead, they briefly summarize a story and present pre-written responses for getting more details or passing on to the next topic. The shopping app Spring largely dispenses with text and instead presents a carousel of products, which users can browse and order with a tap. This happens within a messaging window, but it doesn't much resemble talking. They're debating how much personality a chatbot needs, although virtual assistants like Siri have trained us to expect lighthearted banter. Sometimes that does more harm than good. Apparently, they learned some of this from building a work helper bot for Slack. We hired a friend of ours, who's a comic writer, to write up a bunch of the dialogue for the bot, and it turned out that it was just too zany for a lot of teams, said Eric Seltzer, product manager for a trainable Slack bot called Howdy. Some people enjoyed it, but others are in a more professional environment where that's not so cool. Chatbots are not a new concept. I mean, they've been around for a long time, but suddenly they are fashionable. Businesses and software makers have realized that apps are a tough business. Users tend to not download or use a lot of new apps, and not everyone wants a separate app just to read the news or shop for flowers. So, like, Facebook's Messenger, with its 800 million users on it, presents an opportunity. I guess the plus side of this is at least they're doing these bots that are supposed to kind of semi-interact, as opposed to, you know, last time there was a bunch of people using an online product, say like NNTP, you know, the news, the old news, Usenet news type feeds. Instead, companies from outside decided to spam it with just, you know, flooding it with garbage and making to make money off of. So, we'll have to see if the bot thing means that this will, you just wonder, will they actually, you know, be innovative and help us get more information better, or will it eventually just turn into another way to shove ads into our faces through non-app or as part of our chat apps or chat websites? I guess we'll see. And then it's happened. The moment has passed. We mentioned it sometime last summer or fall. And the trend was that the average web page would be equal to the Doom install image. They thought it would be in about 7 months from July, and it just took a little bit longer than expected. For some reason, in January, in late 2015, for some reason, the average size web page dropped for some reason. Who knows why? But it has now passed the size of the original download of Doom, which is like 2,250K. So that it's not, you know, we're not talking about, I guess next will be when it passes what, Quake, or, we'll have to figure out what the next big milestone as far as download goes. One thing that has been happening though, is that the top pages that are getting visited more are actually getting lighter, while general websites and general web pages have kept getting heavier, you know, higher download per page. The top sites have been getting lighter. They've turned the corner. Apparently in 2014 is when the big sites, the top 10, kind of peaked and turned. Some readers will point out that some of the top sites are search engines, and thus they have an easier job of keeping things light. Although this includes some sites that are pretty much rich content, such as Amazon. So, some of this, at some point, obviously the network, I would assume at some point the network has to kind of peak out. There's only so fast it can end up going. So there will be a point where we kind of have to, where we might have to rein it in a little. I don't think, other than if it makes your page slow, I have a feeling that part of the increase in weight is the large number of sites using WordPress, quite frankly, because at least until now, it has not done a lot of work to minimize the load. And if you put a lot of plugins on it or you put the wrong ones, you kind of pay for it with that. I was talking earlier about sort of change in the computer world, making change in the labor world. Well, we talked about last week about how Intel is backing away from the PC and laying people off, and maybe people paid more attention to that than the other piece. But following up on it, Intel's chief executive Brian Krzanich drew a line in the sand. Intel is not a PC company anymore, is what he said. And what can only be called a manifesto of Intel's new values, he described how Intel is transforming itself from a PC company to a company that powers the cloud and billions of smart connected computing devices. To drive the point home, he noted that the PC is just one among many connected devices. So the new Intel will be built upon five pillars. According to the CEO, the cloud, including servers, data centers, and virtualization, connected things like sensors, autonomous vehicles, or PCs, an evolving memory business from 3D XPoint memory to advances in server and data center infrastructure, connectivity, specifically 5G networking, that's the wireless stuff, manufacturing, and the underlying fab technology. He said that about 40% of Intel's revenue and 60% of its profits already come from outside the PC. This was said last week. He said, quote, "It's time to make this transition and push the company over all the way to that strategy and that strategic direction." So we'll see where that goes, because everybody sees the cloud as the direction of their business. You know, Microsoft has been pushing big on the cloud, and obviously there are players that are already there besides Microsoft, like Google and Amazon. So the one that's kind of interesting is the 5G connectivity one. It's a little bit different. It's unclear whether Intel intends to compete with ARM in powering smartphone processors. But they are apparently looking at the whole wireless thing, which, you know, last time, remember, they got in big on WiMAX. But this time, apparently, they're going more conventional. So, you know, it still involves manufacturing processors, but it sounds like they're trying to sort of move them move over to a lot more devices and a lot fewer, and not have that total focus on the PC world. You know, given that they found Moore's Law was running out, it's kind of not a surprise that they might change the focus. I don't think servers turn over as frequently as maybe, say, laptops and some of that. So we'll keep an eye on where that's going in the computer business. And, there's some other sort of possible shakeups coming in the computer business that we'll talk about, say, under the Apple segment. Hint, hint. And then here's one. Social media. I love when social media and politics intersect. It's always just wonderful. Especially, it's even more fun when it's in some other country, so we don't have to worry about it looking like we're somehow favoring one side or another on something. Apparently, if the numbers are to be believed, the residents of Alberta, Canada, are swimming in sexually transmitted diseases. Last year, they had an 80% increase in cases of gonorrhea. So, of course, they go to politicians to find out what they think about this problem and what they're going to do about it. Dr. Karen Grimsrud said that new social media tools enable people to communicate quickly to arrange anonymous sexual encounters, resulting in increased difficulty in tracking STIs. When people don't know their sexual partner's identities, it makes it difficult to contact partners for follow-up testing and treatment. So maybe that means Tinder. Maybe they need to have – maybe there's a new app or a bot that can, keep track to let you tell that person you swiped right on that they maybe need to get checked. But, and maybe this is another piece where they need to get better on their social media. Alberta Health Services will continue to promote http://www.sexgerms.com and its social media campaign to raise awareness and encourage STI testing. Fighting social media induced gonorrhea with social media sounds very smart. So just kids, watch out on if you're in Alberta, Canada, and I guess also watch out if you're on social media. A little more seriously, talking about changes in the technology market. We'll talk more about it on the Apple segment, but their sales of iPhones dropped this last quarter, which is businessy news, but there's some other parts to it. But it's not just Apple. IDC has published estimates for the first quarter market share, which not only suggests that shipments are virtually flat for all smartphones, but that the mobile landscape is changing rapidly. Apple was the only company in the top five manufacturers that had a big drop, but Samsung shrank slightly as well, and even the Chinese contingent is shaking things up a bit. Huawei is still sitting comfortably in third place, but Lenovo and Xiaomi are out of the top ranks. Instead, it's the popular but not quite household names like Oppo and Vivo that are storming up the charts. So the smartphone market is changing, and it's coming up. This is like the PC market, except the smartphone market isn't that old. So it will be interesting to see where the changes go from there on that one. And we'll talk more about the Apple side of this in a bit. And then finally, on the hopefully good news part, you may have thought that the U.S. government needed a warrant if they wanted to dig through your old emails, texts, and instant messages. Well, that is not correct. They didn't need a warrant for that. This may change soon with the Email Privacy Act, which was just passed in the House by a vote. Here, this one, it was a real close one. When voting on whether there needed to be a warrant to check your email, the bill passed by a vote of 419-0. So it sounds like somebody gets it up there at the House. The law that currently governs how police can pry into your digital life is the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, which was originally passed in 1986. The ancient rule allows law enforcement to search through emails, instant messages, photos that are stored in the cloud once they are 180 days old. If you think that seems arbitrary and weird, that's because it is. Why 180? Why at all? Because in 1986, nobody could conceive the possibility of storing data for that long. A lot of major companies like Apple and Google, quote, require the police and other government officials to present a warrant. It's an informal arrangement that law enforcement generously abides by since Congress has waited 30 years to update the rules. It goes up for a vote in the House tomorrow and has been co-signed by 314 House members, so it's very likely to pass. It's worth noting that though the bill still needs to pass the Senate before President Obama can sign it into law, there isn't any opposition. In fact, the director of the FBI has publicly supported law enforcement needing a warrant to search digital content. So, this certainly won't stop the NSA from sweeping up your old emails and stuff or data about your data without a warrant, but it's a start. So enjoy Congress acting in your digital best interest while it lasts. Senators Dianne Feinstein and Richard Burr, who head up the Senate Intelligence Committee, are cooking up a very bad bill that will give federal judges the power to fine tech companies that won't decrypt data at the government's behest. That the bill hasn't been formally introduced yet, but you better believe it's coming. Indeed, the Email Privacy Act is a major step in the right direction, but making sure the anti-encryption bill doesn't pass is the only way your privacy will really be secure. And that is the news, just in time for 8:32.
That the bill you mentioned, I looked at that and read the source material. It was linked a few days before, before it actually, I guess, hit the Hill. It's got some cool ramifications, though. If interpreted and read and followed to the letter of the law, it means that the NSA would have to backdoor their own backdoors. So I'm kind of pro that.
I'd like to see that. No, anyways.
And you sound super hot. Someone sounds really
hot. Hoo-hoo, baby. Oh-hoo. Rip your shirt again.
Here we go.
Is it hot in here? Or
it's getting hot in here.
Yes, these are the times. I'm glad to be broadcasting in from out of town.
Yeah, nobody wants to be here. But...
Oh, no, come on.
We all want to be here.
That's just... Don't let Lee's attitude infect everyone else.
Yeah,
he's the one
that
doesn't want to be here.
Don't be like me.
That's true. I've stood around in bigger, sweatier crowds at DEF CON and things like that, so this ain't nothing.
This smells like a mint julep.
This smells like geek spirit.
Field of jasmine.
So, in a non sequitur, remember last week when I talked about Twin Peaks?
That's a sequitur. To last week. Sorry.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
well,
kind of
a little bit.
You're
the journalist.
I meant to right now, like the conversation right now.
I would have said apropos of nothing, and then proceeded.
That's why we have Leon.
I would have said too long, didn't listen.
Non-sequitorially to the previous conversation that was happening up until this point in time.
Right. Go.
You know how I mentioned Twin Peaks last week and a couple of months ago because I watched it and I was kind of annoyed at the ending and we kind of had a conversation about that a couple times.
Yes, I remember.
There was just a press release and like a couple days ago and they're going to do a new Twin Peaks series on Showtime this year. It's coming
Laura
out this
Palmer's
year.
Still dead.
I hope you say what I think you're going
to
say.
Plastic.
I can't decide if I want to watch it or not.
Fool you once?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing is I'm not sure. I mean, you know.
Watch it.
It was a good show, except the ending was really frustrating.
If you watch it, it's just because you're a fan and you want to see what David Lynch is going to do.
I remember, what was it, that came out when I was in eighth grade, and that was all everybody was talking about. All the teachers were talking about it, and... Was like
that was the first season.
Yeah,
the second season, nobody was talking about it.
Yes.
And the few who did were very frustrated at the last episode.
Well, because wasn't the answer, I mean, no spoilers for a 20, 30-year-old show, but wasn't the answer for Who Killed Laura Palmer like very, very unsatisfying?
Oh, yeah, I heard that.
I don't know.
I mean, that was the question. That was the whole first season question, right? Who killed Laura Palmer? That was like the thing.
Yeah.
And then when the reveal was revealed, again, I don't fully remember what it was myself, but the reveal was like, oh, really?
I didn't think that was all that horrible. I thought that was okay. I just thought the way it ended was, like, it just ended that, I'm like, really? Like, that's how you're going to end it? Seriously? So the thing is, I don't know if it'll continue or if they'll just act like none of that's reality or what's going to go on. So, I'm I kind of want to watch it just because I think what Lynch does is interesting. But at the same time, I don't want to, like, you know, watch this and then be frustrated again at the same thing.
You know, you just got to be willing to put yourself out there. You know?
Take a risk. Clicked
it. Take a risk. You may, life may surprise you, man.
But they've got, like, 120-something people that are cast in it, including a lot of well-known people now or, you know, want to be in Twin Peaks.
We've only got to pay attention to the first 27.
I think they're going really link-baity with it, though, because it's going to be Twin Peaks Game of Pies.
I see what you did there.
All right, well, in a complete non sequitur...
To the non sequitur.
To the non sequitur. I think, because now that you've mentioned it, I think I have a story that will help you make a decision as to whether or not you should watch the reboot of Twin Peaks.
Is this like a double negative?
Ooh.
Double non sequitur negative?
I have owls in my yard. And I was told
owls are not what they
see. They are not what they see.
Married to Children reference.
The owl? No, it's a Twin Peaks reference. The owls are not what they seem.
Really though, are they what they seem?
They seem pretty much like owls.
Basically owls.
Did it swoop at you with a full moon until it filled your vision? That's what happened in Twin Peaks.
I thought you were making a joke about that other bird story I told.
What?
Never mind.
The story is for the birds.
What other bird story?
I'll tell you off air. Now that I know that I'm not going to get mocked
the
for
one that.
That
followed you?
Yeah, the one that kept showing up.
Okay, yeah.
The one that heralded.
Or just look through the glass and Jay will show you the birds.
At any rate,
it didn't fly at you, though, did it?
One did at the station. We were all standing out there, and one flew out of the darkness and filled up, filled up my vision.
So it was a reference to Twin Peaks at the time, and you just didn't realize it.
Maybe I didn't. That would have been really clever. But it wasn't an owl. It was like a heron or something. All right. So yeah. Anyway, I have these.
Firewalk because... with me.
That's some nice pie. All right, so anyway, because Ernesto tweeted it out and said that Jay is going to talk about his owls, I have to talk about my owls. But yes, we noticed. I'm a bird nerd. I really like birds, but I'm not
bird nerd.
Bird nerd.
Bird nerd.
So when somebody mentions something about the pigeons, do you correct them?
I'm sure that's a clever reference, but I don't get
it. No, because they're not pigeons.
What are they?
They're rock doves.
Rock doves.
Around here, they're not pigeons.
Rock dove. So, no.
I'm just saying, I have a friend who's a whatchamadoodle.
A bird nerd?
Ornithologist.
They would always correct people when somebody would say something about the pigeon. Not, and they're like, actually, that's a rock dove.
I was going to say, I'm a bird nerd, but I am not a bird nerd who's willing to travel to experience birds.
They have to come to you.
They have to come to me. Exactly.
Thus the hummingbird feeder.
I've got the greatest collection of what I call my backyard birding photos. I mean, I go every once in a while, I'll go out to the park, you know, I'll go out to the Brazos Bend or something, or go to the zoo, and you'll see birders out. But you know, they're going out there with their spotting scopes and stuff. They're not even taking pictures. They're just going out with binoculars, spotting coats.
Because they're living
people
in the
who
moment.
Should not wear khaki shorts, wearing khaki shorts with their little hats and stuff. But no, I'm on back.
And their book of Southeast Texas birds.
Yeah, and their little checklist of making sure that they have seen what they need to see, and you know, completing, you know, like collecting Pokemon cards or something. I don't know.
Gotta catch them all.
But I'm a backyard birder. I like it when they come to my yard, and I've had quite a variety of birds show up in my yard since we've lived in this house, and. The owls are like the crowning jewel. We got a mated pair of owls in the front yard. We found the nest, so we know that, you know, barring some horrible act of nature, that we're going to have baby owls. So I'm very excited. But, you know, because the owl reference in the Twin Peaks now or Harry Potter, I don't know. Maybe I've just been accepted to Hogwarts.
You have the kind of neat owls. My parents live out in a much more kind of rural area by a lake, and the next door neighbor had the Martin houses, where it's the birdhouse that has, you know, like 9 or 12.
Yeah, they have to be birds up on a tall pole with a unobstructed field of view for miles and miles around them.
Oh, so yeah, they can see. Watch out for.
I don't know the unobstructed view. Part of the unobstructed view, though, was apparently this massive owl, really large, like, you know, a couple more than 2 feet, in height and with a, you know, 6 or 6 foot wingspan kind of thing.
And had a taste or a penchant for Martins.
It flew up to the Martin house and, like, put its wings around the outer edge of the house and then had a Martin buffet, apparently. And it was just brutal.
No, it's the circle of life I don't much care for, you know.
I mean, except for dinner.
The only reason I became alerted to the owl's presence is because the mated pair of mockingbirds who are raising a young mocking baby in our yard were very upset. And I heard them squawking and going nuts in the front yard. So I went out in the front yard to see what all the commotion was. Because the last time I heard that, it was a blue jay baby had fallen out of its nest. And there was the neighbor's cat was around. So I had to save this blue jay. So I was like, went outside and I'm like, why are these mockingbirds so upset? And they're like all flying around. They're not flying away from me. I got close to the mockingbirds and they're kind of flying around in the tree. And then I looked and there's this dark shape in the tree. And it's an owl. It's and it's tiny. It's not a like giant Martin house eating owl. It's a screech owl. It's a pair of screech owls, and the female is very short, probably less than a foot tall. You know, just very small. And I always thought of owls as being these giant things. But anyway, so got owls in my
like
yard,
the
so.
Great horned owl. It's like, you know, 5 feet tall. Or something.
So this is a Saved by the Bell owl, I believe.
Saved by the owl.
Saved by the Bell owl. Screech.
It's not the secret of the owl.
Oh. Some people will get that reference.
So the owls could be a sign that the Twin Peaks thing is worth considering or not considering, maybe. Or it could be a Harry Potter reference.
I suppose. If you wake up and there's 300 seagulls around, maybe it's the birds.
I don't know about the birds. The owls seem very non-threatening to me. I like them. They're big. Wide eyes.
But... You're not a mouse. Yeah. If you're a mouse, you're another bird.
Don't let him around your Tootsie Pop.
Three.
And you'll have to cancel the front yard mouse rodeo, your annual summer mouse rodeo.
Yes, your mouse rodeo is off now. There's no more rodeo.
No more. Feifel goes to Jay's house.
No, Feifel goes to hell.
Feifel runs for his life and doesn't quite make it.
Did you see the? So before we move on to other technology,
to more technology news.
This is actually sort of vaguely technology
related.
Is this
a tech show?
Since we're talking about Twin Peaks, or yeah, the Twin Peaks and HBO. Did you guys see that HBO is also doing, and it's stalled production right now, but they're also doing a Westworld miniseries?
That could be really good or really bad, depending on how they handle it.
Westworld miniseries, and they have a short teaser for it up on YouTube. It's got Anthony Hopkins in it. And the role of the gunslinger, which of course was played
Yul Brynner,
you know, terrifyingly memorably by Yul Brynner. Is being played by Ed Harris, who I can totally see looking, you know...
Is he going to shave and oil up the head?
I don't know if he's going to... They haven't showed any pictures. That was creepy.
That made... What half of it was creepy? Was
Just
his dead face, the dead eyes.
Was Yul Brynner being Yul Brynner, you
Uncanny
know,
Valley, yeah.
Ed Harris can do the steely-eyed...
Oh, yeah. He's got it. And the teaser that's up on YouTube is like 30 seconds long. They don't show very much. And there is like one, like, you know, 1/10 of a second shot of the gunslinger, like, in profile from behind in silhouette. But it's, you know, if you look up the cast list, it's Ed Harris, which is going to be cool. I'm really looking forward. I would, you know, I'd watch it just to see him be a, you know, dead-eyed murder robot.
Because I am too lazy to Google. Can you tell me when that's released? Is that like a summer next year?
Was
next
Ed
year?
Harris in the Cowboys and Aliens movie?
No, that was Indiana Jones.
No, it wasn't. Oh, it was.
Yeah, it was. Gosh. I mean, it wasn't actually Indiana Jones. But it was.
Oh, I know exactly what you meant.
Him in 007.
Yes.
Groovehouse has me.
Wasn't that the movie you're talking about?
Yeah.
Ed Harris has been in westerns, though. I'm struggling to think of one he's been in, but I know he's done westerns.
Ed Harris will always be an Apollo or Gemini astronaut.
Jiminy
Cricket. Jiminy. Leak. We on our way in. Gemini. Jiminy.
Mercury.
You're thinking of Mercury. Mercury, even.
Because he played John Glenn. And then he turned around and played...
What was that, The Right Stuff or the old astronaut?
Yeah, The Right Stuff was
The Right Stuff. Then turned around and played Gene Kranz in Apollo 13. Ed Harris has been in a Western called Appaloosa. That's where I'm from.
Anyway, the reboot... So, now, for those that don't know or didn't see the Hollywood reboot, which actually kind of sucked, but was Will Smith was in the Hollywood.
Movie. I didn't even watch it.
No, that's Wild West.
That's what we're switching.
There was a TV series in the 70s, I think, that came out for Westworld. But I mean, originally, it was
saying it's a Westworld miniseries. That's the cyborg one.
Yeah, where he's all missing his face. He's the gunslinger.
For some reason, I was thinking Wild Wild West.
No, which was an old one,
which was a cool one because that's like the birth of steampunk.
That was the birth of steampunk. It was actually that had that cool tinge to it. You know, Adam West, and or was that?
So now I want a Wild Wild West reboot
because the movie was so great.
The movie was sucked, but if they could make a show with that kind of same, you know, cheesy Westworld meets Wild Wild West. That's how they got the text.
So this is going to
be waiting.
I never saw
Westworld.
You never saw Westworld? Go see the original.
That's one. It was like Peter Fonda was in it. And the Houston connection for our listeners who are in Houston, they filmed the Earth part where they're before they leave to go to Westworld was filmed in Houston.
Really?
And some of it used the tunnels. They used some of the tunnels and they used inside one of the arts facilities as kind of like it was the because it looked, you know, Houston had that 70s futuristic stuff in it, which is again why it was then 10 years later used for RoboCop to be the declining Detroit of 30 years later. Anyways, but they had that kind of modern 70s look to it, and so they used one of the arts facilities was like the terminal for the rocket to go to Westworld or whatever.
Yeah.
Now they can just film a documentary in Detroit.
If you haven't seen it, it's a little cheesy now. I mean, you
Detroit?
Know. Detroit? Well, Westworld, I mean. It's a little cheesy now, but I mean, it's still kind of terrifying once stuff starts going wrong. Of course, you know, there's this theme park called Delos, and it's where for $1,000 a day you can visit one of the three like themed areas, and there's Westworld and Medieval World and Roman World, and the movie follows two main characters on their trip to Westworld, and each one of these theme parks is a theme park populated by extremely human looking robots, and you can do whatever you want. If you go to Westworld,
they can't hurt you.
So you can go to Westworld and strap on your guns and start mowing down other cyborgs, and you can't shoot other people. The guns won't fire on people, so you can't, you know.
They can shoot each other.
And they never really explain how that works in Roman World. Like, how do you swing the sword and not hit another? They never really go into that. But, of course, as, you know, and they have their first day, and there's a huge gunfight, and everybody's like, whoa, this is so cool. And then something starts going wrong, and the robots are infected with some kind of
virus
or something that's never explained, but they start
Jeff Goldblum is here.
Yeah, and then they start killing guests, and there's this one particular gunslinger robot played by Yul Brynner who is just, you know, got it in his mind that he is going to shoot the two main characters. And their first encounter, before everything goes wrong, he steps up and he comes up to the bar and he's all, like, making fun of them and saying, you know, whatever. And then they go outside to do the gun shoot thing, the, you know, street gunfight. And they draw first and shoot the robot, and robot dies, and they're all like, wow, that was great. And then it happens again the next day, and they shoot him again. And then the third day, after, like, stuff has started to go hinky, the robot kills one of the... They're all like, oh, are we going to do this again? And, all right, well, you shot him yesterday. I'll shoot him today. And then, of course, the robot blows him away. And that's when, you know, the movie turns creepy, and it's got kind of a disturbing ending, too.
So it's not on Netflix?
It rotates in and out. Maybe check. I would check all of them.
I don't know, because I looked on Netflix. I looked up Westworld, and
It might actually be in the free Amazon streaming section.
I'm sure it's available to rent.
I would say the only thing on Netflix that came back on the search for Westworld was Soul Boys of the Western World, Spandau Ballet, the movie.
That sounds legit.
That's it. Yeah, that's it.
You can rent it on Amazon. There are a few places I'm seeing that you can rent it, but it doesn't appear to be super free anywhere. I'm sure. Oh, you know what? YouTube.
So you're saying it's available to rent?
I'm saying it's available right now on YouTube until someone sends a DMCA letter. Probably.
Right. Yep.
To take down.
Oh, actually, and the one that I was talking about that used the Houston downtown stuff. I don't remember now if Westworld did, but I know Future World was the sequel, and it had Yul Brynner in it as the gunslinger again, but cameo.
Future
the Borg and I.
He was so nice in that movie. Why did he turn into
an evil robot?
Such an evil robot. He was so nice when he was the king of wherever. Baldania.
Tanzania.
Because he had no hair.
The king of I, right?
Yeah, the king and I, yes, that's
the correct. King of I. I was joking.
That doesn't even make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
Future World's also not on Netflix.
Yeah, probably not as good as Westworld.
Not yet.
Not.
We're still catching up to Future World.
Right.
See, Westworld's old enough to where they could a reboot could be pretty good.
I mean, maybe. I'm excited to see the TV series.
Yeah.
I think it looks. I mean, you know, it could be that the pilot airs and it's like, well, this is terrible.
They need to keep it gritty. They need to keep it. You know, that's the thing. They need to keep it a little bit raw.
Well,
you know, and kind of have some kind of a slant.
They
on
need to make it even more terrifying.
So here's what the Wikipedia summary of it says. Let's see. I was just reading this. Something about. Where did I see it? Okay, so the movie was about robots going wild in a theme park, but. The Wikipedia page for the Westworld TV series reboot says, described as a dark odyssey about the dawn of artificial consciousness and the future of sin, the series tells a story of a futuristic theme park called Westworld.
Bum, bum, bum.
I don't know, that sounds a little deeper than just like these robots start shooting people.
That could be good.
Maybe. I mean, you know. Done
correctly.
These robots are shooting people was great for 90 minutes, but maybe it's hard to drag a whole miniseries out of that.
Well, pew, pew. And it's tough because the prior reboot of Westworld, they swapped out, to make it more exciting, they swapped out dinosaurs for the robots.
I thought it
and
was
called
a...
it Jurassic World,
oh,
where they have them in a theme park and the guests feel safe and can mix with them, and then suddenly everything goes wrong and the... Oh, wait, that plot sounds familiar.
Man, why does
actually,
everything
Michael Crichton, who wrote Jurassic Park, also wrote Westworld.
Yeah, that's correct. That is true, he did.
Crichton, Michael Crichton.
Michael Crichton. I'm glad nothing ever went that wrong when I would go to, like, Astral World as a kid.
Well, and while you're waiting for the Westworld reboot, you can always go find the Simpsons episode where they go to Itchy and Scratchy Land.
Does Itchy and Scratchy go crazy?
It's full of robot Itchy and Scratchies, but they won't hurt the patrons. They're programmed to never hurt the patrons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then something goes horribly wrong.
as always. Or else there wouldn't be a movie. Think about that. There's the ultimate bait and switch. Westworld.
Where everything is fine.
Boy, we hope they never go offline. You know, never have an accident. And it's like, and then at the end, it turns out, you know, well, it was done by a very skilled group of programmers, and there have been no bugs.
Where nothing could possibly go wrong.
Fortunately, everything was fine. Yeah.
Until you get your bill, and it turns out that all the billing software was full of bugs. And
oh,
triple.
That's where the virus
that
was.
Would be the horror.
No, that's
the horror.
That would be the horror part of the film, is that these people pay serious buku money to, you know, electronically to go to the theme park. They experience.
But
the...
your data has been compromised.
At the end of the movie, they come home and find out that they're victims of identity theft.
No!
NC-17 for sure, based on
security. You can do cutaways, right? So you have the people, they're at the theme park, they're looking at the robots or the dinosaurs or whatever, they're having a good time sharing food and candy. The cutaway to cyber criminals, you know, running up their credit card charges.
Well, have some close calls. Like, they almost could use a fake ATM, and they're like, nope, gotta go. Like, you know, it's,
there were no ATMs in the old West. Don't use that
Don't
machine.
Use that. But it's a dial, it's a rotary ATM. It's fine.
That robot tried to shoot me. No, he is protecting you from identity theft. He shot the card right out of your hand.
Thanks, you old Brenner.
They're the good guys.
The ping and I.
Oh, drop the mic. You gotta pull it out of the stand to do that.
Bonk. No, don't do it.
you can't drop something when you want to.
No, give me a phone, though.
There you go.
Oh, that's when he dropped the phone.
Don't drop the phone. Walk away. I did crack this one.
Did you?
So
congratulations.
Just the little top of the tip there. Barely any.
Just the tip.
Whoops. No.
Oh, yeah.
Just the tip.
Easy now.
Well, you know, if you get a good reputation as a phone cracker, you can probably get the FBI to give you
I need someone to break into the phone. Barrett says, I'll do it.
I'm waiting for a job offer from Celebrite.
I can certainly break phones.
I can break phones.
I've cracked more phones than you've had.
I can crack that phone.
I can get inside that iPhone, no problem.
Here you
need
go.
A bucket to hold all the data when I crack this phone.
Step back.
I think
$2 million. I'll do it for $200,000.
I'll do it for a dollar.
I'll do it for a new phone.
I'd crack that for a dollar.
There it is. There's
that's a UHF reference, right?
No. RoboCop.
No, RoboCop. Is that RoboCop?
RoboCop. Okay. Yes.
Although there was a similar, in UHF.
Yes, it was called Wheel of Fish.
No. The like homeless guy that like the guy gave him a penny and he's like, "Thanks, Mister," because it was like a double struck 1952 half penny
bang
wheat or something. It was worth a ton of money. He gave it to the UHA.
Numismatic humor.
Stupid. You so stupid.
All right. Well, we are coming up close to the end of the first hour
trying
of the program.
Yeah,
we didn't do any of our segments. But
is this the tech show? A quick one or wait till after the top of the
probably
hour?
Wait till after. Okay. We got about.
I love UHF.
That's a great Spatula City.
I have it on DVD.
Hey kids, it's time to drink from the fire hose. That was the Kramer character.
Stanley Spadowski.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. No, I thought that. You know, I was a big Weird Al fan. As
I actually
a young
saw
person,
it. Actually,
that was a great
one
movie
of not very many people that actually saw it in the theater when it was released.
I did not.
I saw it in that's the theater awesome when it was released. It was great.
I was living in San Antonio at the time.
85 or 86?
No, it must have been 89 or 90.
No, it couldn't have been that late. Hold on. Wikipedia to the rescue.
Or, 88.
1989. Wow, later
88
than
or 89. Because, yeah, I know when I watched it, I was in San Antonio, which had to be between 89 and 91.
Later than I thought. Yeah. No, it was a great movie. Just, I don't know, it didn't really do too well at the time.
No, it did not.
didn't really do a whole lot for Weird Al's movie career. But who's laughing now?
Kid asked. I think it's out on. Is it out on Criterion or something?
Really? UHF on Criterion?
I think it is.
I do not have the Criterion version. If it is out on Criterion,
I have to check.
All right, we'll be back with movie chat after these these messages. You are listening to Technology Bites. Believe it or not, I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Jack Palance.
KPFT's Spring Fund Drive is coming up, and we need your support to make it a success. In May, we'll be bringing you some of our best programming to remind you why community radio matters. And your pre-pledge today can help shorten this campaign. That's right. You can make our spring shorter by donating this hour at kpft.org. And if you or your business or organization wants to make a bigger donation, you can turn that into a match or challenge pledge to encourage others to give. Just email Development Director Robin Lewis at robin@kpft.org for more information. Again, our spring marathon is near. Please help today at kpft.org. Thanks. This is KPFT Houston.
KPFT
KPFT is seeking programming of all kinds for our new streaming channel. From music to talk, we want it all. Whether you're a seasoned veteran or a novice, we'd love to hear your big idea. If you're a local podcaster or know one, here's a chance to move from digital to FM. KPFT's web streaming channel replicates on our FM channel, so your idea needs to adhere to language and other policies mandated by the FCC. These projects also need to be non-commercial in nature. Interested? Just visit kpft.org and click on the Propose a Show tab towards the bottom of our front page. Multilingual programming is also welcome. Again, just visit kpft.org for details. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We now return to Technology Bites.
We're still talking about movies in here, so I was regaling. There's a movie that I try to champion as often as I can. It's not a tech movie. It's not a science fiction movie, but it's called Straight to Hell. And it's a...
Never heard of it.
It's
best
done...
soundtrack ever.
It is got a great soundtrack. It's
how old is it?
80s. It's got some of the same cast and crew as you would as was in the Repo Man movie, and I think it might have been done by the same person. It's also got the... What's his name from The Clash is in it?
Joe Strummer
is in it.
Isn't Flea in it?
And it's got Grace Jones in it.
I think Flea's in it.
Courtney Love.
And it's a movie about a group of, it's a couple of bank robbers that are fleeing a bank robbery that they did, and they try to hide out in this ghost town.
It's got Spider Stacy in it. Sorry to interrupt again. That's awesome.
They end up in this weird ghost town that's populated by a bunch of caffeinated, weird psychopaths that they have to deal with, and it's a ripoff of every spaghetti western you've ever seen. It's got Emilio Estevez in it too, so it's very much.
It's also not on Netflix.
No. Unfortunately, but it's worth finding, however you can find it, and it's a great, great film, and the soundtrack, as Groovehouse mentioned, is fantastic. It's just really, really great. But the death scene with Emilio Estevez is just ripped right out of every spaghetti western you could ever imagine, but really, really good. All right, that's it for movie chat.
Alex Cox directed it.
Alex Cox.
He did Sid and Nancy.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of good stuff going on with that film that I didn't even know to pay attention to in terms of all the right connections between...
Sid and Nancy was annoying.
Yeah. Like, so was Punk Rock,
by the way. I just wanted to punch Nancy the whole movie. I'm like,
Sid!
Oh my God, it's just her whining and him falling apart for like an hour and a half.
You're too good at that. Please stop.
At least we'll never see a gritty reboot of that, because you couldn't make it any more gritty than it already was, unless you just gave everybody sand.
You know what is on Netflix? Every episode of The Animaniacs.
Yeah, I started watching that like a day or two after they put it on.
I hear they've got Maloney in their slacks.
you have not been misinformed.
They have pay-for-play contracts.
All right, so let's go ahead and try to bring this show back on the technology track it was destined for.
You sure about that, Jay?
I don't.
Hello.
All right,
the gritty reboot of Technology Bites.
All right.
I guess we need the grittier type Happy Tree Friends music to do that right. But anyways, as I mentioned earlier on the sort of businessy section, Apple had its like call where it talked about its revenue, and it made less money this year for the first part of this year than it did for the first part of last year for the first time in 13 years. So of course the stock type people went nuts. The stock went down like 8% or whatever. Looking at it a slightly different angle, from the technology angle, Apple now makes more revenue from its services than it does from selling Macs. Revenues from services like iTunes, the App Store, other internet services, and licensing have increased 20% year over year. It's a shift that means Apple can now generate a steady stream of revenue from existing devices that are accessing its internet-based services that the company controls. The big apparently a big part of the boost came in App Store revenue. iCloud is also continuing to grow. And while services are now ahead of Mac revenue, that doesn't mean the Mac is failing. Mac sales dropped 12% year over year. This analyst, Apple CFO Luca Maestri, believes the company grew market share despite a challenging quarter for personal computer sales across the industry. If you think back to earlier editions of Bite of the Apple, like last fall, remember, or at the end of the year last year, the PC business, Apple was the only one that grew, and everybody else had lost market share and had lost sales compared to year over year. I think basically Apple just lasted a little longer before it happened to them. So there's that.
Well, they had a couple of things. I was actually on the call because I'm a
journalist.
I'm a dirty journalist. I didn't get to ask any questions, but I was on the call, and there were two like really big things that kind of stuck out. Not to get too wrapped up in the finance talk, but the first thing that they said was that in the March quarter last year, this was the close of Apple's second quarter. In the March quarter last year, 2Q15, they were riding this enormous, ludicrously, ridiculously big wave of iPhone 6 sales. And they said that like the sale uptake they had from the iPhone 6 was way more than they were expecting. And it's kind of one of those deals where like the increase that they got, it was like a 30% year-over-year increase. Oh, don't quote me on that number. It may be wrong. Last year. And so then that one quarter was so out of whack with everything else that even though they hit their guidance for this quarter without any problem, it's still this enormous year-over-year decrease because last year was so honked up.
Yeah, so the problem is that, right, like high success is not rewarded.
No.
Becomes expectation.
It's like working any sales job. It's like this quarter is the most important quarter ever until the next one. And the next one is like, this is now the most important quarter ever. And then
And they said, hey, we might make some money off the Apple Watch. And then they laughed and laughed.
Well, and they don't report Apple Watch money. They roll it into their other revenue category,
which includes
a bunch of other stuff. No, it's making money. They're just not sure. They don't release how much specifically is a broken out category. The other thing is like Apple has relied so heavily on growth in mainland China. Well, not just mainland China, I guess. The entire Chinese segment, which I think they break out between Hong Kong, China, and Taiwan. They've relied on that so heavily for growth over the past probably 2 years now and are doing huge growth there. But they keep talking about, in the call, they call it foreign currency headwinds. But basically, the U.S. dollar continues to strengthen. And so their growth overseas, not in U.S. dollars, is sort of devalued a little bit. And so that's kind of like the other thing is like, you know, they're pushing their business ahead or whatever, but because of the currency imbalance, they're not pushing it as much in U.S. dollars as they would be if they were selling an equal amount of product here. So that's kind of like those two big things. One, this quarter last year was so screwed up, not in a bad way. Everybody made so much money. That this year they just couldn't even come close. And then there were the foreign currency, the foreign forex headwinds that they ran into because of the exchange rate. So that was Luca's big point when him and T-Dog, Tim Cook, kept talking about it. It was just, you know, we can't do anything about the foreign currency market, and we're selling as many as we can. But I did think, kind of to wrap around to your original point about making more money from services than Macs, that is kind of a fascinating thing because, I mean, you know, the Mac hardware is the thing that you see, but it's just not drawing the revenue that it used to. I mean, you think of Apple in 1997, 98, 99, or even in, you know, Apple throughout the early 90s or late 80s, it's a hardware company. It's solidly a hardware company. Apple's not a hardware company anymore by a long shot, I don't think. They're, you know, an everything company. Well, they do make a lot of money selling phones.
Yeah, although they keep, you know, I guess the thing is, though, you know, like earlier in the news, the smartphone market has matured. One of the things that and I'll give them at least some credit on this, is, you know, they didn't the phones get obsolete by features increasing and by performance increasing, not by making them so that they wear out or break or don't work after a short period of time. So there's a whole lot of people who don't have to replace their phone every year. And I think part of why the entire smartphone segment is kind of slowed down is because, other than Barrett, everybody's phones are holding on.
It's people, just a tiny hair fracture. It's wafer thin.
Actually, the smartphone business wants to hire Barrett to consult so they can figure out ways to get more people to wreck their phones and need a new one.
MTBF is meantime Barrett failure.
Because you know, if you think about it, the people, I think one of the things is the people who every time Apple announces a new refresh on the phone, they go out and buy one. I have a feeling that group has gotten smaller, because at some point you kind of go, okay, I'm happy with this phone. Do I need to pay another several hundred dollars to go to the next one? And there's those programs now where you can sort of lease it too, which I have a feeling leads to them not making as much. But in other news, there's some on the Apple Watch front, as that I mentioned a minute ago. The rumor is that it'll refresh this fall, sort of currently. But one of the newer rumors is that the next gen Apple Watch may have some cellular functions to it. A new rumor has it that it'll include cellular connectivity and a beefier processor, so apps will load more quickly. It might mean you'll have yet another data plan to pay for, but the deal would be that the watch would function on its own instead of being tethered to an iPhone. Some of the other features that would make the Apple Watch 2 more compelling would include GPS and a longer battery life, as well as additional health companion aspects. Right now, on the watch front, Apple is pushing developers to make the apps better and to do them as all native, so that they run natively on the device and run faster, and that it makes it faster and easier to use them. So,
what's a big deal, isn't it? I mean, you know, you got this thing on your wrist, and it would be great if it would function in totality by itself without having to be tethered to a phone.
Well, and if you had, you know, if it works well enough, there's a lot of people who don't need the phone, don't have the big phone need, where that might be if they only buy one device. You know, if they only wanted to buy one device, they might go with the watch instead of with the phone. And if they weren't going to put out the money for the phone anyway, then it's not a big sales loss for Apple. So, yeah. You know, when everybody wants their Dick Tracy watch where they can, you know, do their video calls off their wrist or whatever. And then finally on Apple rumory stuff, the iPhone 7, the you know, this is for that's coming out this fall. The rumors are that it's not going to be all that radically different than the 6S and the 6S Plus. It looks like the sizing is going to be, you know, at least according to some leaked design drawings, it depicts dimensions identical to the iPhone 6S Plus. So it sounds like the iPhone 7 may not be that big a jump in look and function compared to prior iPhones, and that Apple's really gearing up towards the iPhone 8 being a big, you know, the one next year being a big boundary pusher. So, the people who had the depictions has offered up accurate information about Apple's devices before, sharing design details of the iPhone 6, 6 Plus, and the iPad Pro ahead of launch. So it's not, you know, so it's not, they're not as flaky as some, so it's a little harder to discount it. And obviously, if you look, has anybody really come out, you know, just broadening it to the entire smartphone business? Nobody's really come out with a boundary pushing phone design in a while now.
You know, well, I mean, what do you mean by boundary pushing?
Where you look at it, where it's way beyond what anybody else has done before, in appearance, and I guess some, you know, obviously function kind of goes in with that. You know, there's only so thin you can get, and there's only so, you know, little of bezel you can have, and all that, and they all kind of look, you know, for somebody who's not as into it as, say, maybe the people on the show here on the air, If you laid out a bunch of phones on the table and you covered up the logos on them, there'd be a lot of them where they wouldn't have any idea which one was the Apple phone and which one was somebody else's.
Yep, very true.
So nobody's really distinguishing themselves. There's some, you know, there's the occasional, each of them has their, like, oh, they used an interesting material, you know, they used Gorilla Glass, or they used, you know, there's a few different things like that, but most of them are kind of all from the same basic template. And so it makes it a little bit, you know, from a media perspective, obviously it makes it a little bit kind of boring. But the phones work and people like them, so there's that. But,
well, I mean, they all look like, and you're right, you're totally right, they all look like, with some minor variations on where the buttons are, the same slab that the iPhone was when it came out. And, I mean, there were other phones in that 2005, 6, 7 period that looked like that a little bit. But, I mean, you know, as far as the front face dominated by a touchscreen with only a couple of physical buttons, that kind of set the mold. And there have been some variations, like I'm looking at Barrett's Edge, Samsung Galaxy Edge or whatever, with a little Edge screen down the side.
Now one generation back, sadly.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they're all kind of, you know, different materials, and, you know, one may have more cameras or whatever. But,
well, there was a time, the early Android phones, it was pretty easy, especially with, like, the, you know, the Nexus line. You could look at them and very quickly identify one phone from another phone. Mm-hmm. You know, in the early days you could, but yeah, now they're kind of all gravitating towards that Apple kind of aesthetic now. Although I can still very quickly tell an Apple, you know, an iPhone from an Android, you know.
I can tell Barrett's phone from all other phones.
It's
broken one. His specific one from...
It's the one that's all broken stuff. But yeah, what would... It's kind of a difficult position that you put technology companies in, too, because what is... Like,
damn it, Pete! Stop it!
You expect them to come up with, you know, amazing, mind-blowing new things every year. It's like this insatiable hunger for new cool stuff every year. Where is the new cool thing? Why is my mind not being blown out the back of my head with this with the amazing ideas? Where are the amazing ideas? And, you know, I mean, how amazing can you get? We're on this cycle of expected innovation, and sometimes they hit it and sometimes they don't. But, I mean,
come on, tech industry. We're on every week for 2 hours. You got to keep pumping out the
stuff to talk about.
Provide us content.
Where's the J phone?
What would it be? Is it is this, you know, featureless fondle slab kind of like form factor the platonic ideal of phone? Are we circling the drain of ideal design and we can't iterate any further because we've reached it, or what? I mean, what else would a phone have?
You just wonder if somebody could come up with a flexible enough screen that you could have a phone that basically is a flip smartphone that you can unfold, though, to be the monolith like it's supposed to be, where the screen stays intact.
Well, I will say this. Okay, so we're of a certain age, and a bit of, especially Pete and I, of a certain age, but yeah, this entire crew were adults.
Yes, chronologically,
we're adults.
Sure.
And
can be tried as adults.
Well, and, you know, we watch this happen and the progression of this, but I think we view it from our own experience of tech. And what it's going to take to blow our minds, I think, is going to be... It's I can't even conceive of it, but I know Pete, with having kids, and I may be afflicted being exposed to kids, see how the younger people are interacting with the tech. So maybe what would be a game changer for people like us isn't on par with what would be a game changer for people who've grown up with the tech or have been exposed. Because I know that I don't use a smartphone the way probably someone who's 30 years younger than I am.
Oh, there was a smartphone. There was a BuzzFeed article about how kids who are in, how like teenage girls use Snapchat, and like 13 to 15 year old men. No. This was like specifically communicating with, not to derail, but if you go look it up, there's a BuzzFeed piece where one of the regular BuzzFeed authors went to his 15-year-old niece and was like, "Show me how you use your phone. You're a teenage girl. How do you use your phone?" And like, she was like, "Well, the main thing is Snapchat. Me and my friends all Snapchat with each other." And like, okay, so like how, like you send like a couple of pictures a day? And she's like, "Well, generally it's like 40 or 50 pictures an hour every day." every hour of every day. And like they, and like he tracked, you know, he sort of sat with her that day and like tracked her Snapchat usage, and like she added him to her, to some of her friends, friended him, and like he sort of like for a couple of days like basked in like the teenage girl world of Snapchatting. And it was like, I was reading this article and I was like, this sounds like, you know, hell. This sounds like the most horrible thing I can imagine, because, you know, they're just talking about like, while he, like, we were in the car and I looked back and watched over the course of 30 seconds, she responded to 40 different Snapchats, each making a different face to a different friend. And like, that's how, for example, a teenage girl might use Snapchat to talk to her friends on a smartphone. And that's certainly so far removed from my experience of how I communicate with other people on my phone.
Well, that's to my point, is because this tool is a tool now for these people, and we are watching the selfie generation. I mean, when adults do it, it's kind of disconcerting, but the way the kids are using technology, it has a different meaning for them. So is the next great innovation the ability to schedule meetings more efficiently on your smartphone using a calendar app? Probably not. I mean, probably it's going to be something so that we don't even care about or wouldn't even want, but it's going to be earth-shattering to the generation or two generations back from us coming up through this tech. You know, maybe the ability to, you know, the smartphone is going to be able to project a hologram of you making a duck face or something.
I'd like to be able to send an emoticon with a meeting acceptance, like a frowny face or like a, you know,
yeah,
face palm.
Well,
actually, you've given me an idea, and I need to kick. Maybe I need to have a Kickstarter and do an app that's called Virtual Boredom, and it's aimed at kids so they can understand what it was like for all of us.
Yeah,
which is you launch the app and nothing happens for like 15 whole minutes, and the idea is to see if they can last till the end of the 15 minutes.
Oh, I see. This is how it used to be.
Now, let's just put them in front of you, like you download a Snapchat, but it takes you about an hour and a half.
Just make them
do it one image and make it take an hour and a half.
Right.
You have virtual boredom, you have virtual 2400 baud.
You can install like a...
And then when the image is finally done, it's like goes about a third of the way, and then it like just, you know, it's corrupted and trails off.
Just give them a dial tone again. Make them dial back up.
But see, I mean, this is all to my point. I mean, this is a bunch of old people saying, oh, you know, kids today, they don't appreciate blah, blah, blah. But I don't think, you know, we appreciate, you know, how commonplace the tech is to us, you know, watching and building our own computer kits and watching the evolution of tech has been phenomenal. But the changes that are coming are going to be based on functioning tech, really, just, you know, computers.
Well, more appliances, and that's the thing. People aren't seeing inside this anymore. There was a generation that kind of came up, built their own stuff, kind of knows what goes into a computer, but I think there's a division between building tech, understanding tech, and then being a consumer and user of tech. And I think that the generations being now, that it's not, I guess, the same.
Well,
the bar isn't as high as it is to be able to use the tech.
To be fair, there's a huge bump between being able to like lay out logic gates on a breadboard in your garage and maybe understand the pinout on like an Intel 7007 versus being able to grok how like these 14 nanometer like SOC integrated SOCs that in this much space have more power than every computer on Earth 10 years ago. I mean, there's a pretty big gap there too between the enthusiast of, you know, 30 years ago and the enthusiast of today. But so you said something a minute ago about you wanted to send emojis or emoticons as meeting responses, kind of jokingly. But
is there something out there?
Well, there was. So there was. I was reading the kind of to key off that just a little bit. The Unicode Consortium, the group that controls, you know, the Unicode, the various Unicode standards, and is responsible for overseeing adding new Unicode pages and also oversees to a limited extent emoji, is currently locked in like this big back and forth battle between where they want to add. There was like a proposal to add some like medieval punctuation marks to the Unicode space to better be able to draw medieval punctuation marks when representing old documents in Unicode. I'm sure there's a reason for doing it. And like the Unicode maintainers were like, we need to do this, but there's this huge push to use that Unicode space for like a whole bunch of new additional emojis so that kids can, you know, emoji the emojis. So the Unicode space, like there's this huge press for, instead of more, you know, esoteric perhaps academically useful characters or a more complete representation of the universal character set that Unicode is supposed to be, to instead gobble the Unicode code space up for more emoji space.
No, we don't really. Why be able to represent historical, you know, texts when we could have like a heart with sunglasses and earrings? Because right now we just have the sunglasses with the heart.
And we can open it up so Microsoft can do just a slightly different implementation, so that when you paste stuff from Word into your web app, it can be even more screwed up than it is today.
Why is everything a euro sign?
Well, I think
the teens aren't using Word.
Well, another thing to consider too is how tech is changing the development of mind and thinking.
Oh yeah.
So
ADD built in just from multiple apps and web surfing.
The thing I've seen, and I've observed it. You know, both my daughters are basically right around high school. One of them's towards the end of high school, and one of them's just about to start. The thing they have, they don't have the problem of being bored. The problem they have is having too much stuff happening, you know, where they want to do something else and they feel an obligation to answer all their friends all over the place.
FOMO.
So it's kind of like
FOMO,
fear of missing out. Mm. You've got to do everything because unless you're on top of everything, something might happen and you miss it.
Or so many different ones going at a time that it doesn't stop.
Yeah, it's like the Snapchat thing.
And that I've seen them be kind of frustrated with that.
But I mean, you know, young people today, they're not, I mean, they don't know each other's phone numbers. It's just contacts, you know,
To be fair, I don't know most of my friends' phone numbers anymore either, because they're in my phone.
But knowing your own phone number, people don't even know their own phone number.
I do know my own phone number.
Yeah, I mean, but people are not memorizing their own phone number. They're not memorizing.
I started having that problem with when cell phones first, you know, when I first got into them in the 90s, I had to like figure out the key sequence to get my phone to tell me what my number was.
Right. I remember, like, you know, when I got my number on my phone, I actually wrote it down on a piece of paper and taped it to the back of the phone.
You eventually memorized it. You didn't just go, "It's my phone, I'm out." You know, it's like the kids today treat it like we might have memorized our MAC addresses. You know, like there might have been a few people that memorized their MAC addresses on a card, but chances are they don't. They just have a network card.
But I'm not saying it as a judgment call, because there is possibility that, you know, freeing up the part of the brain that has to commit this data, maybe that will lead to something else. Maybe the next big change in tech is a change in genetics or in biology because of, you know, the ability of tech to bring us that information. And the fact that, you know, we are, you know, having a conversation about an old movie and you want to go find out about it. You know, you don't remember who the director was or who all played what parts in a movie necessarily.
Wikipedia.
But there it is. Or IMDb.
Go to Wikipedia, yeah.
You go to the internet and you say, oh, yeah, and it's quick. You know, it's like, oh, hey, you're having a conversation. Dial up that information. There's a generation of people that are coming up that's all they do. It's like, you know, if they were, oh, I'm going to pull up the stats on this.
Remember when we were kids and like we would like think of a song and we wouldn't know like the song lyrics for like 2 whole seconds because it took us that long to go Google it?
Well,
is what they would say.
You know, I straddle. I'm almost 40. I'm 37. So I kind of straddle that line. Like I grew up in the 80s and the early 90s. That was when my formative years were going through. I did my high school years in the mid 90s. And we had, you know, I had BBSs and internet access starting
in
about 95.
When was your high school years?
From 92 to 96.
And you're how old?
37.
Did you go to high school?
I thought you said
early?
47.
No. Okay. No. 30. Like, 37.
Something's not adding up here.
37.
The heat in the studio has added a few years.
fan me. But like, when I was in high school, you know, we had like, Wikipedia didn't exist. If you were going to do a research paper, you still ended up at the library. You could go online and look up, or you could go get like Microsoft Encarta.
Did you
like
have AOL?
Disk. No, we didn't have AOL. I had Netcom. We had like actual internet access we started with it. But I mean, you know, and I remember that, although I don't remember it so much that I'm like, kids today have it so great, because like I've been living in this world, you know, along with everybody else, and now the idea of having to, I mean, unless it's like for a university research paper, the idea of having to go to a library, go into the stacks, dig sources out, you know, go to a card catalog, all these things we used to have to do, like that just seems completely antiquated and dumb. And I get the universal access to facts, you know, where we all live in that world now, but it just wasn't that long ago, and it wasn't that way. It wasn't that way at all.
One of the compl- well, one of the complaints that I've heard from my wife, who's she's got a degree in library science.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the complaints that she has about instant access to information is that the information cannot be trusted.
It's not vetted.
Right. You can't, you know, you have people that, and you see this all the time, even the young people have to know that this is true, because you watch on Facebook and somebody posts this amazing photo of Earth taken by the Hubble telescope, mm-hmm. which is just, you know, complete nonsense. But they see it, they're told it's true, and they believe it. And so we're, you know, we still have the adults who are training the kids have this mindset that if it's in print, if you read it, it's true. And because it used to be, you didn't have access to just print up whatever you wanted to.
Well, and yeah, and sometimes, like last week, I did a Google search. I don't remember what it was about. I did a Google search, and it was like the third link looked like it was something that was related. I mean, it hit the Google search, and it was a forum, you know, and I clicked on it, and I started reading the forum, and I'm like, just a second, like, what is this? What's going on? And, like, you know, the, like, SIGs on the people were a little weird, and I scrolled up to the top, and it was Stormfront. And I'm like,
Oops. Well, certain information there would be reliable.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that's sort of frustrating to watch, you know, with kids in school, though, is education and how that works has not, you know, in the workplace, as the computer blew through and you get email and all those other things, the changes that we have in our workplace have been pretty extensive, and the changes at schools have been minor as far as I can see. The kids bring themselves their phones. That's not leveraged at all at school as far as by the school system. The computers are still, lots of times the computers are in a lab, or the only person with the computer in the classroom is a teacher.
We can blame Lupilo for that.
Yeah. Well, I've never been in a school, university or otherwise, where I was issued a computer and where I had to have an email address. And I've never had a job where I wasn't given a computer and had to have and given an email address. Like, I've never been in any kind of corporate job ever. I mean, okay, never had a job, you know, like part-time jobs, like high school jobs. Okay, those don't count. But as far as like real corporate jobs, post my undergrad degree, I've never had a real job where it hasn't been like I've
Lee
given a computer.
BurgerKing.com.
You know, yeah, and I have, you know, an email address. That email address is critical to my job. And, you know, I've never lived in the professional world pre email. And I guess that shift happened right around the mid 90s, early 90s.
That's when the internet was deregulated, basically.
Yeah, that's right about
when
everybody kind of needed to have, you know, I'm sure my dad has had jobs over the course of his life, you know, professional office jobs where that hasn't been the case. You know, he's a bank vice president kind of guy. He's almost retired now. In fact, I think he is retired at this point.
Yeah, 'cause before the mid-90s, it was pretty much like companies that did stuff for the government, mm-hmm. like military or like NASA space-related, or like tech companies that really the educational, like schools and universities. That was really the people that had email addresses and used email to communicate. And it really wasn't in the, you know, the regular business world until, yeah, the internet was deregulated in 94, 95 or whatever, whenever that was.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it still hasn't, you know, here we are 20 plus years later, and it hasn't really percolated. You know, the biggest revolution in the school district where, you know, from my point of view, is that when my kids, instead of having to write a physical sick note to send to them, there actually is a web page you can go to and fill in the stuff.
That's got to be all by state and district, though. I mean, I work with folks whose kids in elementary school all have Chromebooks issued to them by their school districts. This is in other states. But, I mean, you know, it's not a universal thing.
Well, yeah, some of the stuff that I deal with for high school, the assignments or submission of assignments and stuff like that is over the web through like the school website. They can go get
that just seems
like documents for their for their class from the school and stuff.
So, like, now the bully isn't the big jock kid who beats people up in the playground. He's the one who brute forces their hacker, credentials yeah. and hacks their homework and, like, I turned it in. I swear I turned it in. Yeah. Oh, there's nothing in here.
DDoS is the site because he hadn't finished his homework
yet. Yeah. Man, I was born too early.
Then I guess the downside, apparently some of the standardized testing on the STAR testing this past spring, there was some kind of glitch, and large numbers of the students who took it online, you know, basically on a computer taking the test online, it didn't record their answers and their taking of the test. It just was gone. So there's that downside. Because see, I taught some college classes as an adjunct in the mid '90s, and you know, I did the first like website design class for college credit in Houston, as far as I have ever been able to find out. Because it was actually like a special topics course. You know, it wasn't a formal course like I think you can get now.
But one of the things was that. What year was that?
That was I think that was in fall '94.
Okay.
Out at Kingwood College, it's one of the I guess Lone Star College system now. But one of the things was we had a lab and every student was at a computer, so that was cool. And I gave them their tests were online. I'll fess up, you know. Obviously, I wasn't doing CGI stuff in 1994 with these students. What I did have, though, was a script that would email their answers to me when they filled out the form on the test and submitted it at the end. Then it would basically email it to me, and I knew what the, you know, I graded it that way, you know, electronically and gave them their grades. But you know, the sad part is that in a lot of places that still hasn't been reached, you know, they still haven't gotten to really taking tests online. I wonder, one of the things is when the day comes where those computer on a stick, the kind of USB thumb drive type computers, if they get down lower than the price of a textbook, if that might not be the point where then the kids carry the computer in their pocket and then they have screens and stuff in the classrooms and they just plug their device in and do stuff and then keep it with them.
I was really excited about the like the Ubuntu was working on, and I've never heard them come out with it, but they were working on Ubuntu was working on an OS that you could install, and I think it could fit on the Nexus 5 and something else at the time, where it's basically Ubuntu full desktop version, and it's not sideloaded. You could do sideloading, or you could have this Ubuntu 1 or something. Wasn't Ubuntu 1 anyway, whatever it was. You could run it, and when your phone was just like handheld, carrying in your pocket, it looked and behaved like a phone. But when you hooked it up to an external keyboard, video, mouse, it basically became the CPU processor for a desktop and gave you a desktop, you know, OS desktop on the screen. I thought it was a really cool idea, because the thing is, the phones have gotten, you know, powerful enough now that they can behave like a decent desktop, not like a high end one, but.
How many kids at most high schools, and I mean, I don't want to, you know, obviously that there, some are much more privileged than others, but you just wonder at a lot of high schools, how many kids, what percentage of them already have a smartphone that they could use as part of their curriculum already? And then you just have to get something for the students who don't have one to kind of round it out.
At this point, if you're a you know, kid in high school and you don't have a smartphone, it's like being the kid in high school that doesn't have shoes.
that's true. It's probably very close. That's why I mean that if they leveraged that, if they found a way to leverage that, then they could, you know, it wouldn't add a bunch of cost and they would get the benefits of that kind of, you know, basically, because if they've already got the device, then the school part is more of a cloud thing, which everybody kind of gets how that's supposed to work now. So they could have an email address. They could turn in their assignments. They could take tests. They could do whatever through there. And you've got the stuff is in place to identify who people are and have them log into their accounts and so on. Of course, the one kid, the smart ass with the who sniffs the Wi-Fi traffic between all those devices and collects all the
Of course.
All the data and passwords and so on would be the king of his school.
Rules the school.
You don't go steal the other school's mascot. You just make their entire football team fail every course. Or at least the stars of their team.
Crash the stadium Wi-Fi networks on an away game. Sounds awesome,
for the scoreboard.
Actually.
They scored, but the other team got the points.
This is brilliant.
Just wait till the kids get their hands on the tech, then, because they'll probably be cleverer than us old folks. So, what should we pop another segment in before time runs out?
Pop a cap in.
Why
it.
Don't we?
PCAP.
PCAP.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip in the snart tank?
They can.
So you want another big change that we can bitch about? Intel is kind of going down the track that Apple had started talking about. They're suggesting they really want to push to replace the headphone jack on smartphones with a USB Type-C connection. So you're talking about where it's designed to carry data, power, whatever, to the to devices, and it's obvious you can make it somewhat thinner because of the USB-C on it. Same thing, you know, Apple's Lightning connector could either use the USB-C or it can use the Lightning thing, but it'll be interesting to see how long before it starts getting adopted. But it makes sense to change from the kind of analog, because it's really still analog right now. When you put in your that 3.5 millimeter audio jack, you're still talking about the kind of analog signal stuff that we've had for, I don't know, for 50 years now. So we'll see what happens with that one. I don't know if people would gripe about that. You wonder, would it work? I guess it would be just as durable. So once you kinked the wire on your headset, it wouldn't work when it was doing data any better than it did when it was pulling, when it was, you know, putting power and analog signal across it.
Well, you gotta buy all new stuff. Your existing headphones won't work no more.
Well, there would be that. Although the way my kids go through headphones, it wouldn't take that long before the ones they had didn't work. They wear out earbuds. Actually, the best thing has been the big clunky over the ear headphone sets, and some of them have gotten smart where they have the audio cable that connects to the headset doesn't go into the headset. It plugs into a jack on each side, you know, so basically it's the same plug on each end of the cable. And if it breaks, you can just go buy another cable and hook it up to the same headphones.
Well, what I would object to is what the rumor is that, and it's totally unsubstantiated, but the rumor is that Apple is going to drop physical jacks for headphones altogether on their next iPhone design, and they're going to go with Bluetooth for headsets only. And I don't want that. That would make me very unhappy.
I would think with the USB Type-C, since it does power also, would mean that you'd still have that option. You could basically sort of double up the same port that you have to power it. Although I guess there's been the rumors, I don't think for the iPhone 7, but for the iPhone 8, of wireless charging where there wouldn't be any ports on the outside.
I just think about what my typical use case is for putting on the headphone jack when I'm using the phone is usually like I'll start a call with the phone, and you know, I'll need to like go hands-free because I need to type something or look something up, and you know, sometimes I'll try to do it while the other guy is talking or whatever, and just, you know, being able to simply plug something in real quick, whether it's a USB plug or not, or a, you know, a 3.5 millimeter jack, either of those seems like it would be okay. But like, if you're switching, you gotta like bring up a menu real quick and make sure the pairing is right, and then flip your headset on, and oh, what if you forgot to charge it? And you know, just like, this just seems like such a nightmare if it's Bluetooth only. So a switch to USB Type-C, okay, you know, that's all right. But as long as it's some kind of wired connection, I'm still on board. It's when some of the OEMs talk about dropping any external headphone connector and making audio be Bluetooth only, that's where I get upset.
The ones I've had, my Bluetooth starts up fast enough that if the phone starts ringing and I put the Bluetooth in, put it around my neck, I have one of those like, I have a Motorola, I think, but there's the LG one that's basically the like neck band thing that then has the little short wires to the earbuds. I can put that on and power it on, and it'll come on in time to answer the call before it goes to voicemail, or can do it while. So that one is not as big an issue to me. Although for other people, anybody who, when you have a dead battery, then you're pretty much stuck holding the phone up to your head would be pretty weak. But like I said, I think that with the power, needing to be able to supply power and at some point being able to connect it up to a computer, I wouldn't want to always have to use the either cellular or Wi-Fi network to put stuff to back up my smartphone or put new stuff on it or that kind of thing. I still like to be able to fall back to hook it up physically to the computer and manage it that way, which probably makes me an old fart, but it seems like a better way to do things. Where the portless one, you wouldn't have that option anymore. But now here's maybe you could use this to carry your headset around for you. There's a new hover camera that's indoor safe and can be folded up. It's called, Follow Me is an up and coming feature on consumer drones. And then there's foldable ones. Now there's a company called Zero Robotics has gone further with its hover camera. The drone is mainly for aerial photography and videography, but what makes it even cooler is the fact that its propellers are fully enclosed by a strong carbon fiber frame. So it's the safest drone that Engadget has ever played with. You can literally grab it whenever you like without worrying about hacking your fingers off, and it will follow you around. So now you could just have it. Maybe you could get it to carry your earbuds for you. but not if they're wired. Its main camera on the front takes 13 megapixel stills and 4K video. It's amazing. We hardly have devices that we can watch 4K video on, but we all have, so many people have access to multiple devices that can actually record 4K video. It's kind of an amazing advance of things.
I'm still waiting for the drone that I can carry in my car, and when I'm in rush hour, I can press the button and the sunroof opens, and the drone will fly up and then fly down a second later and like tell me how far ahead traffic opens.
So would this be like that bird that launches out of the Mach 5?
Yes, exactly, like the bird that launches out of the Mach 5.
Oh, well, so if you're wishing for that, then why don't you have the whole springs thing where you can just like leap over the other traffic?
I actually would rather have the buzz saws to just clear out the cars in front of me with extreme prejudice.
And of course, also the non-optional small child and monkey. The small child and monkey hidden in the trunk of your vehicle.
Yeah,
Sprattle and Chip Chip are in the trunk of the Mach 5.
What?
They're in the trunk of the Mach 5. What?
Now, see, they need to make that. There's something that needs to be added to the school curriculum. All the kids
must watch Speed Racer.
Before they're in fifth grade or something, have to, like, watch Speed Racer. And they
must
can take
watch
quizzes
the
on,
badly
like, history
dubbed
or
version.
Something. Yes. So, and here's one, just in case you need a little bit of storage at home. There's a company called Backblaze. We've had their stuff since kind of early on. They've been in the info shot and some of that stuff. But one of the things that's nice is they published the specs and designs on their storage pods, and their new one, their sixth generation design, is a 4U system full of hard disks. They have bumped up the number of disks in the system from 45 to 60 disks, so you can get 240 terabytes of storage for 3.6 cents a gigabyte. So, just for at home, a little backup for your, video collection of every moment in your entire life, plus all the audio and every file you've ever generated in a 4U box. It's let's see, their first design had 45 1.5 terabyte disks in a 4U Rackle box, about 12 cents a gigabyte. They've used a bunch of different internal designs, sometimes using port multipliers to get all the SATA ports they needed, other times using PCIe cards packed with SATA controllers, but it's stuck with the same 45 disk per box formula. Now they've broken from that. It uses the same Ivy Bridge Xeon processor and 32 gigs of RAM from version 5, adding extra controllers and port multipliers to handle another 15 disks to get 60 in total. It's a little bit longer, the way they get the extra disks in. It overhangs the back of the rack by about 4 inches, but obviously you get plenty of storage. Backblaze says it gets about a 20% discount on disks because of its bulk purchases. So if you want to build one of these pods with 4 terabyte Seagate disks, that's about $8,800, which is a per gigabyte price of 3.6 cents.
Now, it does bear bringing up, as someone who has worked enterprise storage for many, many years, that if you have a box of, how many did you say, 60 disks?
60.
If you have an enclosure of 60 hard drives, you're going to be replacing one of them like every week at least. So make sure you actually buy 120 hard drives.
Or you will replace none, and then within the same week, 23 will fail.
Yeah, exactly, yes. You will be like, when you don't really think of hard drive failure rates when you're just, you know, at home with your however many computers you have.
With your puny little one hard drive.
But when you start dealing with enclosures full of disks, you very, very quickly realize that these things go off like popcorn. It's like, I mean, you know, I've managed arrays with thousands of disks in them before as part of my regular job at past jobs. And it's like, every day, you're replacing disks. Sometimes you're replacing disks multiple times a day.
We think it's all revolutionary that we can join the, you know, thing that sends us razor blades every month. Our kids will have the system where we'll send you a box of 7 hard disks every week to
refill
your backblaze.
Yeah, well,
via drone.
Well, I mean, some
razor
of
blade drones.
The way that a lot of the big companies do it is they'll pre-stage parts. I mean, you know, instead of having to call EMC or call Hitachi Data or, you know, NetApp or whoever your vendor is, you've already got your, you know, your pre-staged replacement parts, and you tell
and you
them at the
pay,
end of the
you
week.
You just pay for them when you break the seal.
Yeah, at the end of the week, you're like, hey, I used these serial number disks, so send some more, and, you know, you do it yourself. Or if you're, you know, really white label, they send a guy out every single time, and you get to know your technician very, very, very well because you're letting him into the building every single day. But, yeah, so if you're going to build it at home, good luck. I hope you enjoy the aircraft-like sounds that your rack full of hard drives will make, and I hope you enjoy replacing hard drives all the time.
The dulcimer jet engine sound.
And you won't need a furnace. You won't need a furnace. You can just have the just open the door to the
That's
room.
That's right.
Or just come on down to the studio here at KPFT.
Yeah. We're experimenting with hot aisle, cold aisle cooling.
I'm putting my
studio.
Hands over just the laptop, and these things are putting off some heat. We're putting off some heat. I pity the guys that are about to come in the studio. Hey, guys out there.
Oh, yeah, because we only had one set of wet headphones when we came in.
Ah, now they're all wet.
They're going to be all wet this time.
Last couple things on Try Buyer Fry. This one's an interesting idea, and I wonder, you know, they've made some changes. It's for cord cutters from TiVo called the Romeo, R-O-A-M-I-O. I see what they're doing there. You know, the thing was, it's a DVR without the burden of a conventional TV subscription. And the problem when they first came out with the original version of it was it only had a 500 gig hard drive, so it only held so many shows. And it had a $15 monthly subscription price, which the people who were cutting the cords, the $15 didn't really make sense. Now in the new model, they've solved those two problems. They have the 1 terabyte Romeo OTA, which is over the air model, so it'll record, you know, the stuff, the antenna stuff for you, so that you can stream it to yourself. So it's got 1 terabyte of storage, and instead of having a low upfront price and a monthly fee, you pay $400 outright, and then as long as the thing lasts, you can keep using it. It has media casting, multi-room video, stream support, and an interface that unifies internet video with conventional TV. So it is a box that can let you do do a lot of stuff if you're a cord cutter and you want to use over-the-air stuff. So it may be one of those that you know, I just wonder, are there that many people who want over-the-air television that badly that they pay for it? I think there's some, but I wonder if people below a certain age wouldn't be interested, frankly.
I can tell you from knowing some people that are pretty young, they don't even understand the concept of over-the-air television because they are so used to everything just being on demand and no commercials and, you know, whatever they want. So they're just don't even understand the idea that you can't watch it right now. You just want to watch this, like, just turn it on. And why are all these stupid commercials all over the place?
You know, we should talk about, we don't have time today, but at some point we should talk about, like, in the mid 90s, maybe it was the late 90s, AT&T ran a series of commercials, and they were narrated, I think, by like Ted Danson or something, but they were these "You Will" commercials, and it was it was AT&T talking about it. They didn't advertise any specific product. They were looking toward the future, and they were stuff like, you know, have you ever wondered what it would be like to be able to, you know, and the examples were like some typically 90s ones, like send a fax from the beach. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to be able to drive your car, to ask your car for directions without having to stop? And like, and they would, you know, is this upbeat sax music and this, you know, upbeat narration, and the commercials are all like these quick little clips, but like, you know, they're like, it's the one of like, the sending a fax from a beach is this guy has a tablet and he's like writing on the tablet and hits the button and it like makes a fax and he gets up and walks into the surf, and like the people are driving in their car and there's like a navigation system in the middle and they drive through a toll road, and then there's, you know, video phones and everything. One of them was, you know, have you wondered what it would be like to, I don't remember the wording, but it was like to be able to watch any movie you ever wanted whenever you want. It shows a bunch of kids run into a living room and they like, there's this big like wall TV and they walk up and like poke at it and it comes on and there's like all these movies and whatever. And it's like, with very few, I went and all these commercials are up on YouTube and I went and rewatched them recently. With very few exceptions, like, all of those things are now happening, and it's really kind of cool. It might be worth going and looking at them, each one, and be like, here's this list of things that...
At the end of the commercial, the Yoda goes, you will.
Yeah, it'd be like, if you ever wanted to do this, and you will. No, it was more upbeat, not terrifying. It wasn't like, you will. It was more like, you will. And the company that will do it for you is AT&T, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, but yeah, so you talk about kids who have no concept of, like, you know, broadcast TV. It's like, you know, I remember thinking when I was younger that, like, man, it would be so cool if, like, could just sit down and watch whatever movie I wanted. And now, you know, within reason, you know, if Netflix has it and the license isn't expired or whatever, like, we're there. We can do that now. It's kind of cool.
Westworld.
Yeah, just not. Well, but you could go pay for it on YouTube rental. You know, you have to fight three or four different streaming services with overlapping rules and, you know, different licensing agreements. But if you were willing to fight through all that, you can.
Or you can just watch the highlights or of it by watching little bits of it on YouTube and then consider it watched.
Or you can
consider it watched. Consider this watched. Show listened to.
Woohoo!
All right, well, we preheated the oven for the next.
Yes.
The Dutch oven.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be glad to get into some air conditioning. So as much fun as this show was, I'm glad it's over. So thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next Wednesday night live or on the next podcast whenever, or rebroadcast sometime. I don't know how all that works. Time shifting technology bites, as it were. All right. Well, thanks for being a part of the show tonight. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Rudehouse.
Westworld.
KPFT invites you to a celebration of the acclaimed program Democracy Now! And the extraordinary movements and heroes who have moved our country forward. So join us for a visit by Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! On Sunday, May 1st at 1 p.m. Amy Goodman will speak in Houston at the Carl Walker Jr. Multi-Service Center, located at 4300 Noble Street. Visit kpft.org or our Facebook event page for full details. You're encouraged to purchase tickets early because this event is expected to be at capacity, so visit kpft.org for tickets. Proceeds from this visit by Amy Goodman benefit KPFT Houston.
Today, you, a family member, or your ex has an old vehicle in your garage. It needs to go. So why not clear up some headaches and do something good for yourself and the city in the process? Just call 855-KPFT-CAR now. We'll arrange to come take the vehicle out of your hands. Not running? That's okay. We'll have it towed away at no cost to you. You'll get a tax deduction and, even better, not have to worry about it ever again. Just call 855-KPFT-CAR right now. Don't wait. There's no time like the present. 855-KPFT-CAR to donate that vehicle this hour. Thanks. This is KPFT Houston. This is KPFT Houston.